Welcome to the Against the Stream Nashville podcast. In keeping with the Buddha's encouragement to ensure that these teachings are freely offered to all, we do not have any set dues or fees associated with any of our classes or media. In an effort to sustain our ability to do so, we ask that you contribute via our website at againstthestreamnashville.com by clicking the Donate tab, or via the mobile app Venmo by sending a donation to the username at ATS Nashville. Enjoy.
Thanks, everyone, for coming. It's awesome to be here with you all. I get to say y'all. Andrew and I just had a conversation about y'all. The word, not you. So what we're going to do is a bit of practice, I think, to start. So we'll do some sitting, and I'll lightly guide that. Imagine we have some people new to meditation tonight, so I'll guide that in. Also leave some space for silence for you to work with your practice yourself. And then we'll start talking about tonight's subject, working skillfully with emotions. And I'd like to leave plenty of time for Q&A. We got a pretty full room, so I hope we'll get a pretty lively Q&A kind of discussion going. Yeah. So just finding a posture that's relaxed yet alert for yourself. Mainly just letting the shoulders come back and down and the spine gently straighten. And feel free to close your eyes if you'd like. We're going to spend a moment just coming into the room together, coming into our bodies. In case we went into someone else's body. And I'm a big fan of just taking a few moments just to relax within ourselves, just noticing the natural energy and flow of the body without immediately jumping into formal meditation. It's not about here in Nashville, but in Brooklyn, where I live right now, it's sort of busy and people are running around all day long. Feeling purposeful, I guess, in something. So it's often disturbing to the body to just sit down and jump into another doing. So instead, we're just going to connect with the body, just with a brief body scan, and then just let be within the body. So starting at the crown of your head, just connect with a presence there, just bringing some attention and awareness. And as we scan down through the body and connect with the different parts of the body, we're just going to relax tension there. So scanning down from the crown, moving into our foreheads, around our eyes, just let the muscles around the eyes relax. Let them come to rest, be at ease. Similarly, moving down into our cheeks, our jaw, into our neck, and coming into our shoulders. Feel free to roll your shoulders back and forth if you like. Or just gently picking them up towards your ears, just letting them drop. Letting all the tension go in the shoulders. And moving down through our arms into our hands, letting our fingers release into our chest, midsection, abdomen. Connecting into our hips, sit bones, into our legs, knees, calves, and eventually just connecting with the earth and ground beneath us. So we're just going to spend a moment connecting with the earth, feeling the presence of that, literally. Feel free to wiggle your toes if you need. Anything to connect you with this ground we all share and walk on. And right here is where I like to form a group intention. So rather than a motivation, which can be conscious or unconscious, an intention is conscious. And this is our intention, maybe intentions we came here with. We're going to be adding on to this intention in connection with the earth below, where we want to move our learning, contemplation, and meditation tonight. So briefly, we're just going to remember, just flashing in the mind, all others who we share this earth with, starting with our close ones, our partners, friends, family, kids, pets. Just letting that circle widen for yourself more and more, connecting into your neighbors, your coworkers, eventually fellow Nashville residents, be they stranger or a difficult person. Just let that circle just continue to widen until it encompasses the whole of the U.S., North, Central, South America, out into the oceans, until it's circling around the globe. And if you'd like, feel free to connect it further out in the universe. And as we embody this through this presence to the earth and ground, just let a warm heart develop. Doesn't have to be anything heavy or strong, just a warm heart, open, recognizing that just as you came here and wished for well-being and happiness through meditation, all beings wish for happiness in some form. So our own awakening and practice starts to connect into a co-awakening, wishing all beings well, wishing them happiness, wishing them ease, safety. And just let that rest in the body for a moment. And from here, we're just going to start our practice by just noticing the flow of energy, the flow of movement within the body, be it sensation, mood, emotion, whatever's up for you tonight. Just be with that. Which means we attempt to feel it. Doesn't have to be anything large or small, just whatever that is for you. And just as we do that, just relaxing into the body. So if you notice any hidden tension, not just muscular, but maybe where you're holding the body up with a little bit of anxiousness, just let yourself rest and relax. But we're remaining aware as we do that. What are we aware of? We're aware of that relaxed feeling itself in the body, as well as anything that's flowing in the world of feeling. Physical sensations, emotions, subtler energies. We just let everything be what it is. We don't have to reject it. We don't have to accept it. It's okay if it's unpleasant. It's okay if it's pleasant. Just simply let be and relax. Just let yourself gently come home into your body. And if you're already home or you've been there most of the day, just keep hanging out at home. It's kind of amazing what happens when we just open up and feel and allow ourselves time to just be relaxed, maybe even just be bored. We don't have to put a smartphone or something in front of us. Just being with the body, with our present moment experience. Just allowing that to take place. Of course, for some of us, it's going to be uncomfortable. And see if you can just create a gentle sense of friendliness towards your experience if it's uncomfortable, maybe even a little bit of a curiosity. But of course, you don't have to dwell or sit in anything. If you're thinking right now, what should I be doing? What should I be meditating on? Just let be with whatever's there. There's nothing to do. Just to be present, aware, just feeling whatever's occurring. Just being with that gently, letting yourself relax within it by letting be. We're really able to let be in this way, we find a natural calm in the body. So this calm forms the basis for all of our meditation practice. It is not the meditation itself, but it merely forms the platform where we grow our awareness, where we grow our presence. Over the years, when I've sat to meditate without that calmness, it feels like I'm just fighting the whole time, fighting the thinking mind, fighting distractions, sounds around me. But if you find an authentic home within the body, just letting the body relax, rest, it's very simple. We just maintain that, and then we connect to a type of knowingness with our awareness. We connect that in with the breath. So if you'd like, you can begin to connect with the breath right now, just bearing witness to each inhale through the nose and each exhale. I like to connect with the breath in my abdomen, so I like placing a hand right over my belly and just watching and being with that sensation of the breath as I inhale and exhale. You're also welcome to bear witness to the breath at the tip of the nose or just somewhere else in the body that feels relatable and comfortable for you. So we're still preserving this seeing or bearing witness of the body. We didn't let go of that, but now we added in this component of the breath as an anchor to draw us into the present. And nothing's pushy or forced, it's all very relaxed, yet attentive. So we're not looking for perfectionism here, we're not looking for a perfect meditation. We're simply just looking. Just let each breath, each inhalation come slowly. We simply try to stay with that. But really, it's a huge waste of time to fight the thinking mind. It's also a huge waste of time to try to get rid of the thinking mind. So just let your thoughts come and go. The great Zen master Suzuki Roshi said, when we meditate, we leave all of our windows and doors open. Really, anything can come inside. But when they come through, we don't serve them tea. So let your thoughts move through like clouds in the sky. Let any sounds, sensations move through like clouds in the sky. We can become aware of them, but we just simply don't get caught in them. Instead, we connect with the breath, each inhalation and exhalation as an anchor. In the next few breaths, we're going to begin to bridge our practice from our formal sitting meditation to what's called the post-meditation, where we continue with awareness in our life in each moment. So in your next exhale, we're going to let our awareness become a little bit larger. So starting to incorporate and become present with more and more of our experience. So see if the breath in the body can become a full body breath at this point, meaning as you breathe in and out, you're connecting with the body from the head, from your head to your toes. Just be present with that. Just simply knowing that. From here, we invite sounds into our field of awareness, just simply knowing sound. We don't have to know its contents or what it is, just letting the thinking mind continue to rest. And then I'd like to invite you to preserve your still posture in the stillness of mind. As you just gently start to open your eyes, so we're still meditating here, and as you open, without looking around, just come into contact with the space in front of you. And just be with that. Just let loose and relax, but be aware. From here, you can begin to look around if you'd like, just moving the body, gently stretching. See if you can stay with that presence. Okay, thanks so much for your practice. So what to do? We've got about an hour left, so I was kind of Are you guys enjoying practicing?
Yeah?
No.
Thanks for being honest, yeah. So I think what we'll do, this isn't usually like me. I usually like to kind of lecture a little bit first or talk a little bit first and introduce some context and then practice what I wanted to offer tonight for a tool, a meditative tool for working skillfully with emotions. But I think just because of the mood I'm in, mostly sleep deprived, I think what we'll do is just practice it, because I was thinking about it a little while ago, and I was thinking, you know, we have so many things these days for fitting into another sort of intellectual conceptual idea of like, okay, and, you know, if it's inspiring to us, we get inspired about it, it's something useful, maybe we ruminate on it, it's a fun conversation to have with our friends. But where does the change happen? Where does the shift happen? And for me, in my practice over the last 20 years of Buddhist practice, it happens in the practice, right? Of course, part of that is contemplating an idea and coming into connection with it. But unless a shift takes place, or unless we kind of have an experience or have something to take home, it may just be another idea that we start to play with, right? So I want to give you some ideas, because that's good. We need some context as well. But I think what I'd sort of feel would be really useful is if you walked away with some kind of experience, some kind of taste of the practice I want to share and the ideas I want to share, so you could take them home and they can offer you some resilience when working with difficult emotions, yeah? Does that sound good? Yeah? Okay. So, unfortunately, I'm going to ask you to close your eyes and get into a meditative posture again. This one will be brief. It'll just be maybe 5 minutes. And so here, we're going to do this practice. My teacher calls handshaking practice. We could also call it a compassionate presence to feelings. This has been one of my main practices for the last 8 years when it comes to working through trauma that I have, anxiety. So right away, since we've already kind of prepared the ground through a little practice, I just want to invite you to completely drop into your body right now. And that could, there could be a start to that of just feeling a particular place in the body, but if you'd like a suggestion, I'd suggest the area around your belly or around your chest, places where your emotions tend to arise as sensations. So whatever you're feeling right now is completely okay, whether it's something pleasant, whether it's something unpleasant, whether it's neither. We're just going to simply open up to our current experience and let be with it. But we're not bringing in a method or tool here to fix anything. Just simply offering the kindness of non-judgment and the presence of awareness. And that awareness knows, and also the feeling is feeling the feeling within the body. It's actually quite a deceptively simple practice. And really, there's only four sort of rules around it, or four suggestions for how to work with this. So as you feel, whatever you come into contact with over the next 5 minutes, we're going to try our best to not suppress or avoid what's coming up. Second, we're going to try our best to preserve awareness so we do not become completely hijacked by thought rumination on it. But also, we're not pushing thoughts away. We're not demonizing thoughts either. Third, we're going to try our best not to run away from something that may be uncomfortable, if that's arising for you right now. And fourth, which is often the most subtle and challenging in the beginning, is we're not going to apply any agenda, technique, or tool to fix or manipulate our situation. So a lot of times we come to meditation with the idea we want to feel good, and that's all good. You should feel good. But when we condition our emotions to this, we're often telling them a secret, hidden agenda or message that they're not okay. And when we tell our emotions they're not okay, the ones that need our attention, kindness, non-judgment, and courage don't get to heal. They remain twisted in the body. And unfortunately, most of us only have tools of analytical thinking to try to figure them out. But that doesn't always do the job. So here, I just want you to meet your experience with the kindness of non-judgment. And there's a very gentle curiosity here. A little bit of friendliness, but not too smiley, because you're not trying to fix, remember? Just allowing. If you've already come into a sense of relaxation in the body, there you go. That's your platform for allowing whatever wants to arise, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. This is a little bit different than a mindfulness of body practice for those of you who are used to that, because we're applying this fourth technique of no agenda. So right away, it's subverting or undercutting the primary emotions we live in, which are hope and fear. And Within the Buddha Dharma, we say primary cause of our suffering is hope and fear. Again, some of you might be familiar with the story of the Buddha we often call the double arrow problem, where we're shot with the emotion one time of anger, sadness, depression, anxiety. Then we shoot another one with all the resistance, thought rumination, stress we put on top of that, trying to get rid of it, push it away, do anything but feel. So here, we're connecting with both arrows, but especially for some of you, you might be connecting with that second arrow first of resistance. And so the process here is we enter a space of non-judgment, feeling, and allowing. We can't move our bodies, our own emotional challenges, any quicker than they want to go. So if you're like me, I'm a pretty pushy person. So this took me a while to learn how to be. Not rejecting, not accepting. So we often get stuck into two choices. One of rejecting the situation in the hopes that it will go away if it's uncomfortable. Or just accepting it because we get completely hijacked by it and we start ruminating on it, freaking out, identifying with it. It's not anger anymore, it's I'm angry. It's not sadness anymore, it's I'm sad. And either way, we're stuck. If we reject it, we're trying to get rid of it. And we're stuck in the resistance around that. If we accept it, we're stuck in the identification with it. But when we become aware and let be, this is the third option. The one that leads to freedom, the one that leads to liberation. So here, okay to open up and drop our walls and our boundaries. Just letting ourselves open to a vulnerability within. And we just feel that. Just like we would comfort, just like we would be with a really small child who maybe doesn't need us to fix them, but just to bear witness, to look towards. And so we offer this compassionate presence. So some of us have beaten down our emotions with overanalysis and intellectualizing them again and again. Some have beaten them down through drugs and alcohol. Some of us beat them down by staying constantly busy or jumping from one relationship to another. But really, within this practice, this is your time to recognize the methods that are not reliable for well-being. To start to recognize and touch in with ones that, though uncomfortable, offer us a window in. And in Buddhism, we call this looking towards or looking towards dukkha. So right now we're looking towards the dukkha in the body, primarily our world of feeling, physical sensations, emotions, or more subtle body energies, patterns that are stuck within the energy body. So compassion finds a form here in non-judgment, in a presence, a willingness to look towards, a willingness to feel. And from this, like a snake untying itself, things can open over time. They can shift. Awareness is an amazing tool, and when we turn towards feeling with awareness, we allow a chance to come into our own inner essence love, which is a quality we're all born with. Contentment is not something we can get on the outside. We all know that intellectually. But this is one way to come into that experientially. Because we're not applying a condition to prove our own self-worth and value. It comes from within as we sit with our experience. So for now, whatever you've been connecting with, we'll come back to it hopefully at the end in a brief practice if we have time. But for now, just letting your attention and awareness mostly come back to the physical body. You've been working with an emotion primarily. Just taking a few deep inhalations. If you've been working with something challenging, especially, let your breath be long, deep, and slow in order to help regulate the nervous system. And when you're ready, feel free to open your eyes, coming back into the room. Okay, well, thanks for humoring me there. Hopefully we'll get a chance to do that a little bit more. I notice when there's a few sessions of that, even though they can be kind of short, usually people connect with this practice and some kind of shift can take place. So I think we all more or less, well, I'm not sure, I shouldn't assume, but forming a healthy relationship with our emotions is something doable. I just want to put that out there. Some of us may know that. Some of us might not have an experience with that. From the perspective of the Buddhist path, it's completely doable. And also, from this perspective, we're not trying to get rid of our emotions. We're trying to see clearly within them, right? This can often be a misinterpretation of Buddhism that, you know, we're trying to push away everything that's uncomfortable or bad and some really good thing is going to come in place of it, yeah? But actually, it's a process of seeing clearly more and more how things are, how they function. And that remains hidden to us at first as a beginner meditator and starts to be evoked and evolve as we practice. And this is a really interesting question. I mean, I have this question, why? Right, and I'm going to talk about that. And some of you, maybe I want to give something relatable to this as well, which is those of you who are meditators. When you meditate, you know, just something like using the breath and doing kind of a concentration practice, you notice that thoughts and emotions do settle eventually. I mean, sometimes they don't, but sometimes they do, right? And so what is that? What is that experience of thoughts and emotions settling? From a Buddhist path perspective, we would say that experience itself proves our very nature is free and open, yeah? And this is a concept I have to define, and probably tomorrow I'm going to be able to define it a lot more because there's more time. But free and open here means There's no resistance. There's no space where we have to remain hidden from how things are and who we are. There's an openness where identity is not so fixated, where there's less of a cocoon to hide out in. Yeah, and we don't need that cocoon to feel good, right? So this is possible for each and every one of us. It's not something, I don't even think I would call it, you know, it's not even a religious perspective. We just can see this directly when we meditate. We can see thoughts and emotions settle, and there is the possibility for freedom from suffering, right? So one way to look at this is thoughts and emotions are not our nature. There's something extraneous to that nature. There's something that's not that nature directly, right? And one way we can see this is the way I just explained, is thoughts and emotions settle. But yet, the purpose here is not to get rid of thoughts and emotions or kick them out. And this can be a really tricky point to understand, yeah? Some people might think of nirvana or awakening as an emotionless kind of state. No, not at all. It's just the disturbing components of emotions, the emotions and the fixation on that has loosened, so there's more space. So I have an example to kind of give you guys on this. I really like this example. I think it's one that hits my heart, so hopefully it'll resonate for you. So apparently, I don't know, some of you, if you've ever farmed mussels, you can chime in, because I'm always curious in audiences if there's any mussel farmers around. But apparently when you farm mussels, you lay out the babies, the eggs or the seeds, on a rope, some kind of rope or string, and they line these out in a bay, right? And then there's probably some kind of mechanism like a dock or boards to hold those ropes on. And so those baby mussels grow on this rope out in the ocean. And I'm not sure if modern technique, they put some kind of nets underneath, but apparently for the sake of this story, there's no net, right? There's just a free ocean, right? So these mussels grow, you know, and they grow from babies into full mussels. And then, you know, fishermen, farmers, they just pull the ropes on in, take the mussels off, and then, you know, there they go, and they go to be eaten, right? So here it's so interesting because there's nothing actually keeping them held to that rope, right? So they're on the rope, it's their home, they're clinging to it, or maybe some part of their body is stuck to it, but there's nothing actually preventing them, theoretically, from just letting loose and, you know, flying off into the ocean. You know, I think of some like Disney cartoon with that. It's some adventure a mussel would have. But so why this is such a good example is this is really an expression of our predicament. Where, you know, we are like mussels on this rope, burdened and beholden to our states of our thoughts, our emotions, yeah? But from a Buddhist perspective, because they're not our nature, there is that wide open ocean always as a possibility where we can just let go, right? And so maybe some of you have heard this a lot, oh, let go. Way easier said than done, I'll tell you from personal experience. And so I actually think that can be a little bit insensitive too, to just tell someone to let go. But we're not discounting that there is always the possibility to let go, and that letting go is also within our nature, right? And so in religious terminology, we sometimes call this Buddha nature, but I like the term basic goodness. Yeah. So this basic goodness, we could say, is a reflection of our human nature, but also what's underneath our human nature. We see it come out of people in moments of real need, you know, when other humans are suffering, and that compassion just comes out and we act, right? There's where we see part of that nature. So it's not an empty nature in a negative way. It has an expression, right? But it also has a freedom to it. So really the path of practice here is to connect with a skillful means that provides that freedom, where we start to taste it and open little by little by little, right? And that's the path of practice. Now, working with emotions, obviously, we have to find some kind of skillful way where we're not on one side pushing it away and favoring another emotion. Because whenever we have one experience on one side, we're always going to have the reverse. We're always going to have, if we have the white, we have the black. If we have the good, we have the bad, right? And so here, coming into this particular practice that I shared with you, we're really dropping those notions. So the path of practice within this handshaking practice I'm sharing is to drop the agenda, is to drop the preoccupation and fixation with whatever that experience is, yeah? And thoughts are free to move. The emotion's free to move where it wants. But we connect with whatever that resistance is that's holding, making us beholden to identifying so strongly with that emotion as self or as me or whatever, right? So my personal experience, I've dealt with, you know, pretty strong anxiety most of my life. Probably I just found out from my friend Josh Gorda, who runs Dharma Punks in New York, that probably have some kind of a attachment disorder, which was fun to find out. I don't think I'm alone, so I'm not too worried about it. But apparently, I developed, you know, some pretty good anxiety throughout my life. And my whole life, I haven't known what to do with that. I mean, our education system doesn't train us what to do with our emotions, doesn't train us what to do with depression and anxiety. All we have is sort of ways of describing it and learning about it cognitively. But like I said earlier, that's one step, and that can kind of be helpful for some idea of like, okay, this is going on, but it doesn't necessarily solve the problem, right? So I feel that somatic practices are really good for that. So this practice we were just doing was more of a somatic practice of coming into the body and letting be, yeah? So this kind of what I usually label as like a disease of disconnect, you know, where we're not only not trained in emotional intelligence and awareness, a lot of us don't feel just connected to the body, you know. We can see this in some of our food systems as well, where we put a lot of really toxic substances into our body, yeah. And so what's the path here is to reconnect with not only our fundamental sense of body, our fundamental sense of emotion, just as it is, without the overlay or interpretation of what we think about it, just what it is as a feeling, right? But through that, we also come into connection with our fundamental nature, which is free and open, like this muscle sort of letting loose and, you know, dropping in the ocean, right? So this isn't immediate. Obviously, it's a process and it takes time, but it's doable and it's workable. And what happens as we work skillful means like this for working with challenging emotions is we eventually come into a quality of essence love. Now, essence love is a term one of my Tibetan teachers made up, but it's based off of a Buddhist principle. But the idea is that basically when we're always acting with a condition to produce our happiness, we end up in this kind of hollow space or this hollow state where we're always having to feed that hollowness, right? For me, it's food. I've been overweight most of my life and definitely types of food addiction and having to feed that hollowness through that, right? And again, this is connected into value, self-worth, all those kinds of things. But at our root, what we're all born with is this quality of essence love, a quality of where we can all be happy for no reason, right? I love this phrase, you know? So sometimes you see this in really rural places and places where there's not as much cognitive education, but still there's communities intact and a lot more communal places. I'm not sure, my guess is, I don't know, so I don't want to say, but I feel like aspects of the South might have more communal connections still than where I grew up, like in California. Well, it's still 4th of July. Yeah. So, but I'm sure it's being eroded quickly if it still exists here, you know. And again, part of our socioeconomic systems are, you know, fun ways to do that. So, but we can see, whenever there's quid pro quo involved, whenever there's sort of an exchange, a condition, it often takes us further and further away from our own well-being. So essence love is another way to say well-being. But it's not well-being in the sense of like something we're going to get and we're going to have that completely and we're never going to suffer ever again, right? It's just a space where we can come into and be content and happy in our own skin, right? With what we have. Doesn't mean we won't suffer. All the other sufferings of what we call the different types of dukkha still apply. But we start to come into our own sense of okayness, our own sense of contentment, our own sense of just being a healthy human being. So unfortunately for a lot of us, this is often where our path starts. It's often where the Buddhist path kind of starts at helping you to go beyond healthy human being, actually helping you to go beyond a human being. But if we don't have the healthfulness of just being a healthy human being as a base, it's pretty difficult, the second one, right? And a lot of also what we call spiritual bypassing can happen. So what the practice we're intending is to reconnect. Reconnect to the body, reconnect to emotion, and to almost kind of like play with that process of resistance and fear that we have when a difficult emotion comes, right? Now again, if we have trauma in our past, we're not trying to re-trigger trauma here, so each of you has to go at your own pace, and it's like, I call it like just dipping your toe in the water a little bit. You don't go full bore in, but you work like that. So I call this the medicine of looking towards, right? And so, you know, we have this sort of overabundance or toxicity of looking away, I feel, more or less. And it's, you could see the damage it's doing in our communities, the damage it's done to our own minds, to our own relationship, to our emotions. So we have to become almost fanatical about this looking towards. Not telling other people what to do with themselves, but with our own minds, with our own emotions. And a willingness to look, right? A willingness to honestly look. So there's a difference between thinking and feeling. I think when I first started this practice about 8 years ago, I was a monk when I started it, and had, you know, by that point a lot of practice under my belt, a lot of awareness of the Buddhist path and meditation, but still had no clue what to do with my emotions, you know? I didn't know what to do. All my anxiety is still all there, all my low self-worth is still raging, right? But now wrapped in religious robes, which makes it even worse sometimes, right? So for the longest time, for about the first 6 months of this practice, I was just trying to figure out the difference between feeling a feeling and thinking about a feeling. So some of you might have been having that issue, you know? You're trying, okay, he said feel a feeling, but you're thinking about the feeling, right? So we work the process of dropping the thinking and just feeling. But we're not pushing the thinking mind away. We're just simply dropping the awareness into the body, right? And letting that take place and letting a connection happen. So here there's a kind of curiosity. There's almost like an open question in there where, you know, my guess is a majority of us in the room, you know, our most challenging emotion is something we don't have a lot of curiosity about. It's like, I want to know as little about you as I can, right? Because you should go away. But I just want to put this out as a question for you to take home too. Has that worked for you? So it's an interesting question. You know, does that work? I think it temporarily kind of works. You know, just like, you know, getting high kind of temporarily works, but not in the long run. Yeah. So here, there's instead a process of developing a curiosity, a healthy curiosity about our emotions, a healthy curiosity about the feelings in the body. And so the premise here is that actual traumas, actual disturbing emotions that recur as habit patterns get stored in the body. I mean, you know, when you think about it, it's kind of like obvious because where else would they get stored? But they get stored as energies in the body. So in the Tibetan tradition, we have a representation of what's called the subtle energy body. So it sounds kind of new agey, but it's really not. Maybe it is. But anyways, basically what interfaces between the physical body and the mind is a subtle energy body. And this is represented by three components having to do with life force energy, the channels that the life force energy moves through, and then central drops, which represent sort of our moods or emotions. And when the subtle body is healthy, we have this sense of essence love. We have this sense of contentment and well-being. And when it's not healthy, we have the opposite, right? Depression, anxiety, low self-worth. Also, our sex drive gets affected by the subtle body being off. So how do we connect here? We connect through the mood. We connect through the subtler feelings in the body, and we just let be. And then, like I said, like a snake untying, over time, through that process, things open. And not only do they open, we begin to come into a deeper understanding of our emotional world. I mean, when I first started this, I had zero understanding of my emotional world. I can conceptualize it, right? I could say this emotion is this and label it anger, label it this, and that's all good and well, it's useful, but it's not the end. Because if an intuitive wisdom doesn't develop, then we're always beholden to some sort of thinking process to work with the emotions, right? So right now I'd like to do the practice one more time with you all. I just want to kind of introduce a context a little bit and maybe a little bit of stuff to make us feel good in our thinking mind. And then let's practice a little bit. And then I'm going to just open it up for Q&A and discussion. We'll just do another short one here, maybe 5 minutes. But what I'm going to add to this practice is an actual physical dropping. So for some of us, this really helps. If you're like me, I'm like an addictive thinker. So sometimes a really vigorous physical movement, like you all know when you do vigorous physical exercise like running or at the gym, your mind is way more chill and kind of open. It's easier to connect with the body after that. So what we're going to do is something vigorous. We're not going to run, but we're going to do something vigorous. So basically what we're going to do is we're going to, on three, we'll hit together pretty vigorously, just like our laps. And then with our voice, we're going to say ha. So ha is a Tibetan syllable that actually helps to cut through conceptual mind, right? So again, we're not trying to push away the thinking mind or conceptual mind. We're just simply offering a tool to cut through it so we can feel. Does that make sense? So once we drop right into the body and just continue the practice of being present with feeling, right? So for some of you, it may be unexpected what arises. What I notice is sometimes this breaks open enough that actual things that are under the surface can come forward. And just be kind with that, right? Here we go. Don't be scared. Ready? 1, 2, 3. Just drop into the body. Right away, you may feel some blankness. Don't try to do anything, just let be. Just be present with whatever's there. If nothing strong is coming up for you right now, that's fine. Just be with the body. You can even just put one hand on the belly if you'd like and just be with that sensation as an anchor. And we just wait patiently. If there's something already up for you, great, you can offer that the kindness of non-judgment and just this presence of feeling. If there's nothing strong that's arising, it's okay, just leave open this platform of allowing. Just allowing whatever wants to arise, to arise. And if nothing wants to rise, that's fine too. For some of us, often there's a sense of numbness. Just feel the numbness. But what we aren't doing is we're not using the thinking mind to sort of figure out the experience. We're just dropping that if we can. Just being in the body and feeling. So for me, when I often drop in, I feel some kind of anxiety, a little bit of a buzz in my belly, and so I just connect with that buzz. I'm not going to try to push it away. If it wants to go, it can go. If it wants to stay, it can stay. Whatever, man. Just do whatever you want. I'm just going to stay here with you and feel. You can open your compassionate heart in that way to yourself, you'll see a lot start to shift. Maybe even an emotion or sensation we've been struggling with for a long time, there can be a little bit of a window of curiosity opening up towards it. So there's nothing in particular you need to be feeling, just whatever's there, including something pleasant, if that's what's up for you, since we're just doing this spontaneously. can be also quite restful to just allow without having to be somebody, without having to identify so strongly with to an experience. It's pretty exhausting, I think, having to hold up our emotions all the time, having to ruminate on them, identify, project them onto others. So let yourself benefit from the rest of awareness, the rest of just meeting the emotion where it is. No agenda. And I know for some of you this is really uncomfortable. I just want to encourage you to be gentle, be light. And we need a little bit of guts or courage. But it's not a courage to destroy or conquer the emotion. It's the courage to feel. So we'll do this for another minute or two. I'll just let you have your own experience, just connecting in this way, attempting not to suppress, get hijacked, run away, or apply some agenda to fix. Thank you all for your bravery. I feel like I'm sending soldiers into battle, but without guns. So we have about a little over 15 minutes. So this is my favorite part, so don't be shy. How did the practice go for you all? What came up for you? Please, if there's any confusion, doubts, I'm not afraid, you know, if we can discuss something that's, what's the word, you don't agree with, I'm happy to let it all fly.
As a clarification, did you say not identifying with the emotion or not identifying the emotion?
During which part? Was
when you gave us instructions at the beginning of this last meditation.
Yeah. Oh, when it was the meditation, then it's, you don't have to identify what it is.
Okay.
Yeah, like so.
So naming and labeling emotions falls under thinking?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
But it's a useful practice in other contexts, just to point it out. So you may do that as a Vipassana practice, you know, as a general practice throughout the day. But when doing this practice, we're not going to label.
Okay.
If it
comes. Sorry.
No. It's good. I just wanted to put a caveat here. But if it comes, like you're just feeling something and then the mind just knows, that's okay. It's just you're not consciously doing it. Yeah.
Okay. What does it look like to get curious without thinking?
Yeah. That's the million-dollar question, right? Yeah. Where's $1 million? No, I'm just joking.
It's
Oh, okay. No, it's a process of sort of entering this new relationship with the feeling world, right? And entering this new relationship with, I mean, maybe an analogy is better. I was practicing one day and just thought of this, you know, to me my experience felt like this, of like being dropped off in a helicopter in the middle of a jungle with a blindfold on. And for a lot of us who haven't really been trained in this kind of way of relating to our bodies and emotions in this way, that's what it feels like. It just feels like being dropped off in the middle of nowhere. So the only choice we have is to find some kind of semblance of a trail and just take one step at a time very slowly, right? And so the learning process happens at the level of intuitive feeling, not at the level of thinking about the experience. That's kind of my answer. But we can continue to talk about it.
Yeah. Okay, well, I don't want to hog it, but just give us an example of you being curious during your meditation.
Yeah, so like I gave the example of my anxiety. So usually my anxiety shows up as like a buzz in the body. You know, usually it shows up as in my belly, right, as a kind of buzz. So that's not quite, there's a feeling there that, I attribute to emotions of anxiety and anxious thoughts and things like that. But it's also just an energy, a sensation, some kind of movement that's happening in the body. So I'll connect with that buzz and just be with it. Again, with these same principles. No agenda, just showing up, not trying to manipulate, trying to push it away, not trying to also get hijacked by it, which is also what usually happens to me when I'm not paying attention. But it's simply just being aware and feeling. And so, yeah, that's usually how I work with it. Yeah. With other emotions, it's more subtle because, for instance, sometimes what we end up connecting with eventually in this, as the practice goes deeper and awareness goes deeper and deeper, there's stuck trauma in the body that is very confusing. Like, you won't be able to put a name to it. It may kind of seem like sadness, but then there's like anger attached to it and all this other stuff. So that's when this practice is actually starting to work, because you're actually starting to connect with the root things, the deeper sort of stuck things in the body. And then, and if you start to think of it at that point, it kind of messes the practice up. But again, I want to be clear, we're not like pushing the thinking mind out. We're just gently ignoring that tendency, or we're changing up the process of how we relate, training in a new way. Yeah, is that clearer? Wonderful.
The worst that I didn't have to think about, I just could feel that buzz. Also, the idea of curiosity in the body, really, there's a lot of things that happened for me during the bunch of meditations we did, because it felt like curiosity came from underneath me or something, like as if it was in my belly, like if I had eyes that were sitting in my belly looking at what was going on, so that I didn't have to use my mind to figure it out or think about it, or as if I had hands that were in my stomach, like, and the emotion was clay or something like that. It was like using my body to prod or get curious rather than coming at it from top down. It was like bottom up. That was really helpful.
Beautiful. That's it. Yeah, I think you connected with the essence of it. And what will happen for you, possibly, it happened for me this way, similar, where once you start to feel the, I like that, I never heard that before, you start to feel the eyes there. I usually call it the like intuitive wisdom, because wisdom, when we in the West we attribute wisdom to a cognitive event. In Buddhism, it's not just cognitive. Wisdom is also like, I don't want to say post-cognitive, but like transcognitive. That's a better word, yeah, because it's like a both and. But the wisdom of feeling starts to develop, where it's a non-conceptual or a less conceptual type experience. So keep going with that. It's quite powerful, yeah. And then what will happen eventually is you can recognize I mean, it's a possibility. I don't want to say for you exactly, but I'll say my experience. For me, what happens is I realize I don't need my thinking mind to understand an environment or experience all the time. And so this is, I believe, connecting us back into our more primal and primordial roots that we've lost in Western culture because it's gotten so top-heavy. And again, we all come from some sort of indigenous culture eventually, if you take it back farther and far enough, right? And you do see indigenous cultures are much more in tune with that kind of wisdom, where it's not just I'll give you an example too, because this is, I'm just excited by your, because I love this part of the practice. One of my Tibetan teachers who is, Tibetans are more or less indigenous people, and he grew up in Tibet, and then when he was 15, he got thrown into prison by the communist Chinese, and he was also recognized as a reincarnation of a great master, so he had like, they were extra hard on him, and he went into a labor camp and stuff. And anyways, when he got out, he's kind of a wild yogi, so he just wandered around Tibet for a while before he escaped to Nepal. And he's also a doctor, and that kind of doctor is very connected to the earth. And he was giving a teaching to us one time, and he said in Tibetan, the translator at the time said, "You people think too much," was what he said, right? Which kind of like, I don't know, most Americans are not going to react so well to that, because it's kind of like an insult, too. We're like, whoa, you know, you don't think too much, you know, it's whatever. But anyways, another Tibetan speaker in the room later said, if you read into the Tibetan words, what he was really saying was, it's not that you think too much, it's that you're primarily seeing the world through the thinking mind. So it's like our whole reference point is top heavy in the thinking mind. And so this practice starts to balance it out. And so we get in touch with other parts of our human nature. That part is really exciting for me, and it has been as I've been doing this. Yeah. Thanks for asking, saying. So, yeah. Yeah.
When I can connect to a strong emotion in the body, what usually happens is that my mind then produces some pretty strong imagery around it, and it's metaphor, and it's deep, and it's loose, and I often wonder how to work with that, because I know that part of that is the mind attempting to make sense, but it's useful in terms of like integrating what's happening back out into my experience. So I'm like, how much to go with that, how much to hang.
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. It's not a problem, like in the context of this practice, because it's kind of, you're correct in that I think it's having to do, the imagery is the way one way to put it is we process a lot of things as human beings as symbols. And so that's one connection we've lost culturally, which is a shame because we deny that, and it's actually quite important. So I think that's part of that process. No, and it's totally normal, totally natural. And so, but what I would say is if you're getting caught, then it's like the image can come, but then the thought rumination happens like, oh, that's kind of sexy. Let's keep going with that, you know? That's when you drop back into the body in this particular practice, yeah. And I want to say everything I'm saying tonight is more around the context of this practice. It might be different with other practices. It's not a universal. Thank you, yeah.
I had a sense of peace during this last practice, and it made me wonder how I could tell if I wasn't confusing peace with numbness, as you said.
Yeah. No, that's a good question. I don't struggle with numbness myself. Talking to people who do in this practice, it's not a peaceful sensation, the numbness, because it's usually the protection around a deep trauma, right? And so the numbness is the wall form there. So for someone, like I've talked to people and students I work with in this practice who often, they just don't feel, you know? And they're like, I don't feel anything. And it's often that wall of numbness. So yeah, maybe it could be for some people a sense of peace, but yeah, I wouldn't correlate the two in general. But good for you, I'm glad you're able to feel the peace. Yeah, thanks. Yeah.
And that it just led me to a recollection of an event that of things that I wasn't consciously aware of, but kind of gave me reason to think, oh, that's why X, Y, Z.
Mm. Yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I've heard it said, you know, the greatest distance or the holiest road is between the head and the heart.
Mm.
So what's nice about the
Yeah.
It's the idea that the head and the heart also go down to our feet, to the world, and to all the other feet.
Yeah. Thank you. And your statement, it's connected into her question and her question as well. So yeah, that's wonderful. I think Ajahn Sumedho, he uses intuitive wisdom in a slightly different way, but I'm wondering, I want to talk to him sometime about, like, there's a book where he talks a lot about intuitive wisdom. Theravada monk, but there's one thing I wanted to say and see if I can remember it. Yeah, oh, the mind being pervaded throughout the body. You know, this is definitely in Buddhist teachings, we feel the mind is here, not here. The brain's interacting with the mind, and it's a muscle to help bring about perception and other functions, obviously, but the mind mostly abides here. And this is where also the main life force energy, so when we die, the mind, from a Buddhist perspective, leaves this part of the body. But also the mind pervades throughout the body. And what's super interesting, too, is that, this is definitely getting a little esoteric, so I apologize, but I don't know, I just thought of it, so I thought I'd say it. This is how we can explain enlightened mind as well. Because once the mind is liberated, it's not centralized anywhere, right? I watched a really cool movie called Arrival. I stay up till like 2 in the morning watching it. Have you anybody seen that movie? So cool, because it's talking all about communication and language and how the aliens that they were trying to communicate with were benevolent. They didn't communicate in with a sense of time. They were beyond time. So they were really evolved. So it's really interesting when you think of mind in that sense, because we assume mind is bound by time and bound by materiality. But it's, yeah. We start to see it's much more fluid. And one way of seeing that is we start to see it's also throughout the body. It's not centralized. Yeah. Let's say your mind is in your toe. There's a practice in Tibetan Buddhism where a teacher will send a practitioner out into like a mountain and say, go look for your mind. Some people say, come back and say, it's in my toe.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice. So, maybe time for one more, if there's something. Yeah.
First of all, thanks for coming here.
Yeah. I came for the barbecue, by the way. So that's this is just like the side dish. But sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
I'm kind of new to the Buddhist teaching. In the beginning, you talked about the double arrow.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's a famous story in a sutra of someone coming to the Buddha, you know, basically wondering having suffering from being shot and wondering, like, who's the person who did it, what village are they from, what's their mother's name, like, all this information. And the Buddha was like, well, wouldn't it be better to just pull the arrow out? Like, why do you need to know all that? Just pull it out. And so we often use that as a parable, referencing sort of how we react when we're experiencing suffering. Because we're experiencing the painful feeling itself, be it a painful emotion or physical a pain. And then on top of it, we put the fear, anxiety, worry, anger, resistance. So that's the second arrow. So the second arrow is actually mostly what we're working with at the beginning. Because we're working with a relationship of recognizing that appearance or resistance as sort of, it's useless. It doesn't serve a purpose. Yeah. So that's how the story functions. Yeah. Yeah. All right. All right, now I'm going to get barbecue. So thank you all so much. I usually like to close out with just a short dedication. So just how we intended. I'm kind of going to seal that intention. So feel free to close your eyes if you like. It's going to be really not too long. But here we're going to imagine all of our virtue, what we can translate as the effort we put into our practice, learning, and reflection tonight. Also the effort we put into driving over here, making preparations for it. These are all what we call, there's a quote where it says, taking one step towards the meditation cushion is a profound, is an act of profound merit or virtue. So here we didn't just take one step, we took many. We're just going to spend a moment just rejoicing in that, just feeling gratitude, feeling joy in our own practice, and then letting that gratitude fill the room, taking joy in your neighbors and all the others in the room who, despite their life circumstances and whatever they're working with, really took the time to show up and engage with the Dharma tonight. And then all of the goodness, collective goodness we've cultivated together, we're going to share with all beings, just as we did in the beginning and we connected with them. We're now going to imagine either as a ball of giant light spreading out from this room, or if you'd like, just as a feeling in the body, and just sending that as far and as wide as existence, all the way through Nashville and the state of Tennessee, filling the United States, emanating out maybe to Canada, not sure yet. Just going and going until it fills the entire planet, and then emanating out into the universe, going beyond time, beyond space. Just feel that warmth, compassion, love in your heart, and then rest in that sense of spaciousness for a moment. Okay, so thank you all so much.